Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly with an extra busy pod today. Premier League, trouble at the Emirates. Arsenal as empty as a Dubai skyscraper and with almost as many flaws. We ask, is the only thing that can stop Chelsea now the African Cup of Nations? And will Ireland be applying to play in that tournament too? Elsewhere, El Clasico. 10-man Barca beat Madrid with Ibra failing to bottle the big game. Whilst in the big Serie A clash, Gilardino hits the post like Tiger on his way home. But Inter extend their Serie A lead. There's FA Cup news, Carling Cup news, plus your posts and tweets, and a look forward to our big Friday night extravaganza live from the Emirates. All of that in today's Football Weekly. On board today, listeners, you'll be delighted to know, Barry Glendinning.
Hello, James Richardson.
Hi, Barry.
How are you?
I'm very well. I'm good. You look refreshed.
Yeah, I'm feeling refreshed.
Good news. John Ashdown, Alphabet Dating's John Ashdown. What letter are we up to, John?
There's a certain amount of, what do you call it? What's that thing where nothing moves?
En passe?
Possibly. Right. I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of something else.
Status quo?
No.
Stalemate?
No.
Like First World War?
No. Hang on. It's not going to come, is it?
No.
No, this is great radio.
Stasticity.
No, what is it? It's...
We've got three parts. Yeah. I have to say, ordinarily, we'd kind of wait for inspiration to strike and then pick up. But we're doing a special no stoppages allowed pod today. Isn't that right, Sean Ingle?
Absolutely, James. Barry, are you eating something?
Inertia.
That's it. Right.
That's worth the wait.
Right.
So, Sean, he's trying to crowbar some bantering. I'm eating a bar which Uber producer Matt Hall went all the way to South Africa to buy.
Yes.
Called a Nosh bar.
Right. And that's funny because?
Because of its obvious sexual connotations, which you weren't aware of, apparently. Yeah. This is not the only thing you weren't aware of. 2 hours ago, you didn't know who Michael McIntyre was.
Happy days.
Yeah. Now, I saw you watching him on YouTube then and not laughing at all.
A wry smile creased the corner of my lips.
He's not funny, though, is he?
Well, I only saw 3.5 minutes or so.
He sort of states the obvious. This is me, a bitter, failed stand-up comedian.
Right.
But, you know, the manner in which he goes, have you ever noticed you go to get in your car and you don't have your keys? And that's it. There's no punchline. It's punchline-free comedy.
Right.
It's the way forward.
It's funny because it's true.
I wonder if the way that Barry feels about Michael McIntyre is similar to the way that Jimbo feels about Steve Ryder and people.
My stubs.
Oh, now you're getting nasty.
I've got a great Ray Stubbs story, which I can't
Let's
tell
hear
on
the great.
I really can't.
He's quite high maintenance, you know.
Apparently.
I'm going to speak out of turn about other inhabitants of the big TV house, which they've changed the locks to. Apparently he's high maintenance. Ray, if you're listening, I think you do a great job. Now, Arsenal, Chelsea. What are we going to talk about first, Chelsea or Arsenal?
Well, let's talk about Arsenal, because I think they're the big story.
This was going to be the game we were going to judge them on.
Exactly, that's what Arsene Wenger said.
And what's the verdict, Sean?
Well, it was the usual Arsenal failings. Their defence was as brittle as a stale flake. Their attack was one-dimensional.
As amoeba strip?
No, I was sticking with the one analogy. All those old failings, Arsenal, 10 years ago, they had the solid back four. You had two really tough bouncers in Vieira and Petit protecting that back four. They gave very little away. Arsenal dominated possession for large parts, didn't really do very much with it. And every time Chelsea came forward, you feared for them. I was looking at the Opta stats earlier, and apparently Arsenal have only conceded 8 shots on target in the Premier League in November, but they've conceded 5 goals.
Wow.
Which sort of suggests that when you get out of them, they are a little bit flaky.
These Opta stats, do they show Didier Drogba doing very little?
Well, apart from scoring the 2 goals and running amok, I can't believe Wenger said that. He was obviously frustrated at having lost, but he should have had a little bit more class, I think, after that defeat, because his team were well beaten.
Right. It was obviously an injury-ravaged Arsenal side. Sorry, Barry.
No, I was just going to ask, do you think if the goal that was disallowed hadn't been disallowed, would it have made any difference? There's obviously speculation, but...
You're surely not asking me.
Well, I'm asking the floor.
You can never tell with those sorts of things, can you, really? I mean, it could have given Arsenal a bit of extra momentum, but the way Chelsea were playing, it was only going to be one result at the
end. Then, Bakary Sagna, I think, pulled down Nicolas Anelka in the 17th minute. It could have been a penalty. Arsenal would have been down possibly to 10 men. I think if Wenger wants to make that case, then he...
I noticed Anelka didn't appeal for that penalty in the same way he didn't appeal for the penalty in the match France famously won against Ireland, more of which anon, I fear. But why do you think, is this part of the new mature Anelka? Is he so lackadaisical that he just can't be bothered appealing for penalties?
Possibly. The other thing I thought was quite interesting, speaking of diving, Drogba didn't dive, didn't tumble about, didn't gesticulate madly like he normally does, and I think was all the better for it yesterday.
Yeah, he looked like a proper big, hard, sort of the world's best lower league centre forward almost, didn't he?
He was like a kind of slightly better Mick Harford.
Let's see. Arsene Knows News was tweeting you, Sean, earlier to say, do we think that post-Chelsea Wenger is going to buy in anybody in Robin Van Persie's absence? If not, it's stubbornness. What's the verdict, by the way, on Van Persie? The placenta business isn't working. It's 3 months, 5 months.
You
now,
hear,
I even heard
3 months. Hear 5 months. Yeah. I mean, they're guessing, I think, a bit at the moment.
Right. And do we see Arsenal buying anybody in?
Well, it won't till January, you'd imagine. Yeah. And I mean, Wenger last January did buy Arshavin. He's always said he'll only buy at the right price, and the right player comes available. You would hope that, having seen Arsenal been demolished yesterday.
So what do they need? What do they need?
Well, they need a goalkeeper.
Right.
They need another centre-half, even though I think Vermeulen and Gallas are okay, but they need another backup, because otherwise you've got Sylvester and Senderos. They need a defensive midfielder that's big and strong. And I think they need a centre-forward because Eduardo was off the pace yesterday and looked brittle.
He did. This business of the centre-halves, as you say, they didn't have a bad game particularly, did they? I mean, Vermeulen possibly more than Gallas, but is it not defensively, is the problem not the whole team rather than specifically the two guys at the
back? That's a fair point. But I do think they need a defensive midfielder more than anyone.
And Diarra and Song
haven't really...
All right, well, the inverse question to Chelsea...
And Dan Wilson, obviously.
Or, in fact, exactly the same question. What are they lacking? There doesn't seem to be a chink in their armour.
Is there? Yeah, is there a chink in there? I don't think that... There doesn't look like it at the moment. Certainly Arsenal couldn't find one. The one blot on the horizon could be the African Cup of Nations. It'd be interesting to see what view Ancelotti takes on that. In the sort of past, they've not looked to bring anybody in
well, he
January,
maintains... When I settled down with him in his cosy corner office at Cobham, actually, only a couple of weeks ago, he said, no, we're not going to look to bring anybody else in, because he actually tantalisingly floated the notion that they're going to play in the African Cup of Nations, well, not in the African, but while that's going on, with Anelka up front and Cole and Deco and Lampard as a kind of... somebody else. Who's the other creative fellow they could be using? Well, it might be Malouda.
We weren't privy to your warm bath with Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was kind of creative midfield tactic lineup. And he says that he thinks that the title is going to be Chelsea's. It's just brave of him, isn't it?
I think it's nice sometimes for managers and players to go out on a limb and say it should be ours. So you know, good on him.
He's not going out on a huge limb, though. Really, they are clearly at the moment the best team in the Premier League, aren't they?
John Terry and Ashley Cole were brilliant, Barry. Yeah, they were. Do you think he sometimes doesn't get the credit he deserves, John Terry? And Ashley Cole?
I never particularly criticised John Terry as a player. I think he's a very good player, but I... I don't think he's international class. I think as long as he's wearing an England shirt, I think he's an accident waiting to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
But if he's playing for the best team in the Premier League and the joint favourites for the Champions League, so he must be class enough for them. Surely he's class enough.
I thought he and Cole, anyway, Cole, were outstanding against Arsenal. I'm sure lots of other people agree.
The goal that they scored, Terry's pass inside, if it had been Vermeulen to Clichy to Van Persie, then it would be all look at Arsenal's slick passing football. And maybe Chelsea as a whole don't get credit sometimes for the way
I think I'm right in saying that John Terry is the best pass percentage accuracy in the
top broadsheet came up with that stat this morning. I think 82%, is it?
Something like that.
His pass completion.
The very final thing I think we should mention, this is from the Times, not from me, but they compared Arsenal's height and Chelsea's height and weight rather. The Chelsea players are averaged 10 kilograms heavier per man and I think 5 centimetres taller. So when people say it was men against boys, there is a little bit of evidence.
10
support that
per man. Really?
Apparently, yes, a lot of creatine like in there.
There was an interesting point during yesterday's game where I think somebody went to sort of shoulder Drogba in the Arsenal penalty area and just bounced off him, like literally sprang back.
That might have been Vermeulen, who actually injured his shoulder. No,
yeah,
was it Traore? unnamed companion of producer Ben.
It's Alex, the work experience.
Oh, right. Oh,
guy.
Alex
the guy who's in on work experience.
Alex is
clearing up our football knowledge.
Right. It was good Traore, was it? Traore, says Alex, who's sitting with Ben, experiencing work. Good. Right, well, there you go. United, Man United, who are now the closest thing Chelsea have to a competitor for the title. 5 points behind. Big win for them at Portsmouth. Interesting how Avram Grant, his first game with Chelsea was against United. His last game with Chelsea was against United. His first game with Portsmouth was against United. And he's lost all three of them.
We should have the Twilight Zone music on, shouldn't we?
That is the Twilight Zone music, as you all know. Right.
It's like 1955 in Back to the Future. They all just keep going back to that point.
It's like a fulcrum.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, then. Liverpool, the turning point of their season this Sunday, a 2-0 win over Everton. How jammy was this win?
We talk about going back in time, and this was classic Liverpool from when Benitez first took over. You know, defensively dogged, you know, uninspired going forward, but yet grinding out a result. And I thought they were very, very lucky indeed.
Mm. Mm.
Sean would have to be very concerned at this point about his 20 quid bet that Everton will, you reckon they'll finish the top 10, I reckon.
16th and plummeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are only 3 points off 18th place.
I'm very Bolton. Confident, having taken Barry's money for the last two seasons.
As you never fail to point out.
So basically, Benitez is a little bit of optimistic thinking that this is going to turn out to be a turning point. No.
Well, it could affect the mentality of the, mm-hmm. of the club. Certainly, there was something in Mascherano's celebration when he the poxiest possible goal, and he charged off like he'd beaten 10 players and screened one in the top corner.
Yeah.
That showed perhaps a certain amount of heart and spirit, maybe.
Now, when we were discussing this game earlier, John, your recollections of it led me to the impression that I obviously was watching a completely different match. I don't remember Aquilani playing, but I might be wrong.
I don't think I pointed that. I don't think I said that.
What special circumstance is it going to take for Benitez to actually bring the big summer signing on? He's fit now.
Well, it's like a philosophical conundrum in that, does Alberto Aquilani actually exist? You know, it's like if a tree falls in the forest. But the only evidence we've seen is him sitting on the bench, I think, and, you know, is it just a cardboard cutout?
In fairness, it's pretty substantial evidence that the man exists.
Right. Well, that's probably a fair point.
Schroeder's cat.
Exactly. That's a very interesting analogy, which we don't have time to go into now. So, can we talk about, to finish off part one, do we have room, producer Ben, to talk about Manchester City Hull, the big one. £200 million or something this team has cost, and they've got 7 points from the possible 21. No Premier League wins since September. Not only that, these seven straight draws, they've been in a winning position in six of them. It's shocking stuff. Why is Mark Hughes not like an advent calendar with his days numbered, Barry Glendinning?
I suspect his days are numbered. I've said before, I think probably could be 6 months ago or something, that I thought he'd been fired by now. But, I mean, fourth place in the league is there for the taking this season, and City, Villa, who should be there or thereabout, are not stepping up, and not, you know, City could be second or could conceivably be league winners. There's no reason why they shouldn't be. So the blame has to lie at Mark Hughes' door, I suspect.
I wonder whether it's partly the players they brought in not being winners, as Barry says. The likes of Lescott, the likes of Barry, the likes of so many others are used to finishing fourth, fifth, sixth. Well, similar sort of situation when Mourinho took over at Chelsea. He brought in a few players that had won him the European Cup at Porto, players that were used to lifting trophies. And perhaps that's part of the problem. They don't actually expect to win every game. They don't almost have that arrogance that comes from when you've won things in the past. And that would be perhaps my take on it.
That's a very interesting theory.
It is a very interesting theory. Nice one, Sean.
They've also brought in players from Man United and Arsenal as well, you'd have to say. There are people who have won things in that team.
That is also a very interesting theory.
What about Hull? The problem clearly there was the old chairman. Ever since he's gone, they can't stop winning.
Well, Brown made some comments afterwards. He sort of said how he's feeling a bit more comfortable now and things.
Really? He's taken his earpiece off as well.
Has he? The only whole bit of info that I took out was the fantastic celebration from
that was magnificent. Yeah.
I can't think of a better pre-planned celebration that I've ever seen than that.
Well, what are the other candidates then? You've got your Gascoigne dentist chair. You've got your
Bebeto rocking the baby, which is rubbish.
Yeah. Right. There was a Craig Bellamy golfing. That was Barcelona.
I'm a huge fan. Up until Jimmy Bullard on Saturday, my favourite was Joey Barton and Georgios Samaras.
Bernardo Corradi.
Or Corradi with the corner, knighting the other with the corner
that
flag.
That was very nice.
But I don't know if that was planned.
My favourite, I think, on this score would have to be during the incredible Totti, I'm going to be a father era at Roma, which is mounting crescendo of media interest because his you know, rather fetching media personality wife was about to give birth to an heir to, you know, the King of Rome. And we went through all the thing of kind of the thumb sucking and the cradling and all that. And then finally, I think he maybe was, you remember this one, either was him or somebody paying tribute to him. The goal was scored and the player ran over to the sideline with a baby stuffed up his jersey. And then the others basically arranged themselves around him
a
gynecological team. Was it the ball?
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. And then they basically, as if they were obstetricians, and then they basically delivered the ball from under the jersey. It was magnificent. Sadly, hasn't been emulated by dads to be around world football. Anyway.
But hats off to Jimmy Bullard. Seems to be the instrumental figure in keeping Phil Brown a job and keeping Hull in the Premier League, as looks increasingly likely. And that goal celebration was magnificent.
Indeed, it was. Well done, plucky Hull. And plenty more to come from the likes of Man City. We look forward to the Carling Cup, which is going to throw some interesting ties our way this week. But before that, in a moment or two, we'll be dialing up Dr. Sidlow in Spain to hear all about El Clásico.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Time for Sidlow. Sid, El Clásico. Barcelona, Real Madrid. 1-0. Ibrahimovic with a lovely little volley. How did he celebrate?
I think he just jumped in the air and kind of punched the air a little bit and looked very pleased with himself.
Well, he's had some practice at that. And what did you make of the game?
Well, it was a weird one. I think in the end it probably was worthwhile. I think in the end it probably was up to the billing of the Clásico, in so much as there were lots and lots of chances. It was very, very tense, very, very exciting. The first half was probably more a kind of defensive containment half than the second, where the chance was when the chances really started to happen. Although, of course, by then Cristiano Ronaldo had already missed it. But I have to say, I really, really enjoyed it.
Excellent. And what was the reaction, say, in the Madrid press to losing again?
Well, they've taken quite a lot of positives from this. They're saying that it's the best that Madrid have played this season, which I think is true. I think it is the best that Madrid have played this year. They were very impressed with the way that Madrid went for Barcelona in the first half, because it's different to last year when Barcelona against Real Madrid at the Camp Nou was a game in which Madrid tried to defend themselves and were very, very defensive and had a couple of breakaways. It's true that Madrid played on the break yesterday, but they did it with a much higher defensive line, with a much more aggressive approach, much more of an attempt to actually try and make things happen. So they're very, very pleased with them from that point of view. So much so that, for example, the headline on the front cover of Marca is, "It tasted like a victory." The trouble is, of course, it might taste like it, but it's actually not.
Yeah, indeed so. You mentioned Ronaldo then. His rotten record against Barcelona continues.
Yeah, and that's something that the Catalan press have picked up on. I thought it was a little bit harsh that in the build-up of the game, there was pictures of a scoreboard and it said Messi 6, Ronaldo 0. In other words, Messi had scored against Ronaldo's team against Real Madrid 6 times, and Ronaldo had never scored against Barcelona in the 3 games that he played for Manchester United. He really should have scored this time around. In fact, he should have scored, of course, when he played for Manchester United before, because he missed that penalty against Barcelona in the Champions League. He had a very, very good chance in the first half. In fact, I would go so far as to say an easy chance in the first half, and he wasted it. But apart from that, I thought he played quite well. He looked very strong, considering that he's been out for the best part of 2 months. He was very, very quick, and he caused Barcelona problems to start with. But he could only last 65 minutes because the doctor had told Real Madrid that under no circumstances should they play him more than 70.
Right, okay. And what does Pepe El Brujo say about all this? Pepe, the man who had promised that within a couple of months Ronaldo would be returning to Portugal, never to play football again.
Well, funnily enough, Pepe El Brujo, seeing as he's been proved wrong, has gone rather quiet. He's not standing and shouting from the rooftops anymore. There's been no word from him just yet. I'm sure if Ronaldo gets injured in a couple of weeks' time, he'll jump up and down again and say it was all down to him. Maybe he'll say that Ronaldo's miss was all down to him. I don't know, but things haven't gone their way this time. He's decided to keep his mouth shut for once.
Crikey.
Sid, if you don't mind me asking, a game, say, the big El Clasico between Barcelona and Madrid, how does that compare, sort of, say, the atmosphere-wise to a game between Liverpool and Man U over here?
Well, it depends what you where you judge atmosphere, what you count atmosphere to be. Now, in terms of the noise in the stadium, the intensity of the stadium, then I think there are moments when a Barcelona Real Madrid Clásico matches it. For example, but in particular when Luis Figo was playing for Real Madrid Barcelona, the noise every time he got the ball was really genuinely incredible. You would sit in the stadium, Christ, this is so, so loud. But it doesn't have, I think partly because Madrid fans don't travel. I think there was about 150 Madrid fans there last night, very, very high up in the stands. So there's no kind of banter between the fans. There's no going at each other like that. With 2 minutes to go before kickoff, it was virtually silent in the stadium. And I remember turning to the guy sitting next to me and saying, bloody hell, is this supposed to be a Clásico? What? And the atmosphere was really flat. I think that in truth, if you ask English football fans who go to Spain to matches, often they leave disappointed with the atmosphere. But yeah, it is true, of course, that 98,000 fans make a hell of a lot of noise, even if it doesn't have quite the edge and the tension and the aggression that, say, Liverpool Man United would have.
Sid, Billy Shears posts in, and welcome back, Billy Shears, a while since we heard from you. He says, I was watching Villarreal Sporting Gijón this weekend.
Oh, God, what a game that was.
Yeah, the commentary, he says, is from an Englishman with impeccable Spanish pronunciation trying to sound enthusiastic. Was it you, Sid Lowe?
Oh, that's me rumbled. Yes, I did have to sit through that game. But not, you know what's worse? It's not just sitting through a game like that. As he rightly says, it's talking through a game like that for 90 minutes on your own, no co-commentator, utterly bored shitless and trying not to sound like it.
Right. And where are you not in some kind of studio at the moment?
I'm just outside a studio at the moment, yeah.
Right, which one?
Which might be the big banging noise you can hear every now and again. The door keeps opening and someone, and it shuts very loudly. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Which isn't good for a studio, is it?
No, but what's your media commitment today, Sid?
I've got to talk to Real Madrid TV about Real Madrid.
Sid, do you think Jimbo's a bit jealous?
I'm not jealous. I'm delighted for Sid.
I'll tell you what, they would love to have Jimbo on the show today, I'm sure.
Let's make it happen.
If Jimbo can get a flight over to Madrid, I can make it happen.
As what? A kind of Ivan de la Peña lookalike, or what?
No, as an on-set pundit on a debate about whether Real Madrid are any good or not.
No, that'd be interesting.
It wouldn't.
Right, no, it wouldn't. Okay, well, there you go. So, Sid, listen, that's excellent. Many, many thanks for that, and good luck with the et cetera and all that, and we'll speak to you on Thursday. Sid Lowe in Spain. Meantime, in Italy, there was a big game Sunday afternoon as Inter took on Fiorentina. Fiorentina were on a bit of a high after their victory in the Champions League, while, of course, Inter were coming off that 2-0 defeat at Barcelona. And what happened? Well, Inter always looked the better side. They had a 1-0 win mentioned in the intro. They're great bit of skill from Gilardino, who received a long ball upfield, chested it, immediately then chipped it over his head, spun round and raced through on goal, but unfortunately hit the post. Would have been a fantastic goal. And who knows what it would have done to the result. But as it was, Inter, who'd already had a goal somewhat wrongly called back by the referee, took the win 1-0, and they are now 7 points clear at the top of Serie A. The nearest team to them are Milan, who were all set for a 0-0 draw down in Sicily Sunday night. Sean, you were watching this one, weren't you?
I was. I had a small interest on AC Milan winning, and I'd given up because it was...
Well, they were playing Catania, and it's a Catania. Decent bet that they would have...
And it was Catania 19th in the 18th in
Serie A.
And it was a dire game, I thought.
19th, yeah.
Ronaldinho was awful.
Odd touch. That was the thing, you know, they had Ronaldinho and Pato and Seedorf and Borriello all playing up front, but just nothing happening. As Gazzetta says, for 80 minutes they looked like 11 ghosts. It was all very kind of insipid, and because Catania basically just come to defend. Well
they're draw specialists, Catania.
They are a bit, aren't they? It's not doing them very much good. And they were going to get their draw until the 93rd minute, only 4 minutes allocated of time added on for stoppages and that. And 93rd minute, Huntelaar had come on 5 minutes before the 90th. Inzaghi hooks the ball back for him in his kind of scuff volley, manages to sneak under the keeper, and suddenly Milan have a 1-0 lead. Now, this is Huntelaar's, Klaus-Jan Huntelaar's, first goal in 8 months, Barry. 8 months. And even more extraordinary than that was the fact that, from kickoff, the ball somehow gets back to him, and this time he invents a beautiful Van Basten-esque lob over the keeper. So suddenly he's got a 2-0 win.
Just to bring him down a peg or two, rather than being a Van Basten-esque lob, it was very similar to the goal that Lee Bowyer scored for Birmingham against Wolves on Saturday.
You said a peg.
Yeah,
not a whole box.
Oh, Lee Bowyer's not too bad.
Anyway, Milan are now the closest thing that Inter have to a rival for the title, 7 points behind, because Juve managed to lose yesterday 2-0 in Cagliari. That's their first defeat there in 10 years. And again, a brilliant goal by this interesting Brazilian striker that Cagliari have got called Nene, who scored against Milan last week, Juve this week. It's terrific. Well worth having a look at that one. Beats Gigi Buffon, as the commentator said. There was only 1 centimetre he could have found to put the ball in. Very small balls in Serie A. And he managed to find it from about 30 yards out. And then Matri added another, and Juve were beaten 2-0. They were coming off a 2-0 defeat away to Bordeaux, and you will recall perhaps that the club had said a couple of weeks ago that no more slip-ups will be allowed, and they've had several more since. So the question is now, the clock is a-ticking on Ciro Ferrara.
And meanwhile, Claudio Ranieri is sparring Roma to another victory.
They came from behind at Atalanta, and, which is important because they've got the derby coming up next week. Whereas Juventus, who, as I say, all sorts of finger-pointing and tension between Ciro Ferrara and the club, Ciro Ferrara and star summer signing Diego, all this. Their next game is at home to Inter. Lose that, and they're what? Rummages for piece of paper. What's 8 plus 3? 11 points behind. So there you go. That's a huge game coming up next week. Should also mention on the derby front that it was the Derby della Lanterna this weekend, the Genoa derby, and Genoa won 3-0 over Sampdoria. Very bad-tempered affair. Lots of red cards and that.
How many red cards?
3. It's quite bad-tempered. Right then. Mention exciting things. They don't come any more dramatic than this. The news that Ireland have appealed to world governing body FIFA to be allowed to compete as a 33rd team in next year's World Cup finals. This, according to FIFA president Sepp Blatter.
It's got about as much chance of happening as me running over to Barry, stripping him naked, smearing baby oil all over him, and then caressing him softly from behind.
Right. But I'm not sure if you would have put the choice to viewers worldwide, which they'd rather see. I'm going with the latter.
Yeah, I think the baby oil would definitely...
Baby oil, yeah. All the way. Barry, you're Irish. Can you explain this to us?
Well, I think possibly a lot of people find the manner in which certain Irish people say the word 33 very amusing, and that may be why we've applied to be the 33rd team in the World Cup. There are two ways of looking at it, I think. One, you can say, well, if you don't ask, you don't get. Hmm. And the second is to completely disassociate myself from my compatriots, apply for British citizenship, and just hide my head in shame at the embarrassment of what's happening.
It is a strange thing, not only because how would you possibly have a 33rd team? It's not as if there is that precedent, can we apply to be that team? But also because they weren't even winning the game when the controversial Thierry Henry goal was scored. They were drawing and quite possibly would have then gone on to penalties.
I mean, this story broke very shortly before we came in to do the pod, so I'm not exactly sure who's behind that. But I think at the moment, Ireland is flat broke. I think two-thirds of the country is underwater. And really, there are more important things for Irish people to be worried about
like
at the moment.
The Kevin Costner flop Waterworld.
Well, I think it's not entirely removed from the truth, to be honest.
Interesting.
I presume it was the FAI and their...
Yep. It was.
Chairman,
they had a
John
delegation
Delaney.
To, we received a delegation from Ireland at FIFA. They were naturally absolutely at what has happened. They know the match cannot be replayed. They have not asked for any sanctions, but they have asked very humbly, can't we be team number 33 at the World Cup. They have asked for that, really. Presumably at this point the crowd was going, no, get off it, Sepp.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're being patronised by Sepp Blatter, it's probably time to just give up the ghost and accept we will not be at the World Cup.
Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah, I was going to put out. He goes on to suggest that if they let Ireland back in as the 33rd team, they'd have to let Costa Rica back in as the 34th team because they were denied by an offside or presumably offside goal against Uruguay.
Right. Now, this kind of thing has happened in Italy before when famously somebody, Luciano Gauci, he of hiring women footballers fame, took the federation to court. And in order to see off an ever-lengthening number of court cases, they decided to revoke his relegation and stick him in the division above as an extra team because they couldn't really take the promotion to away from one of the sides that had earned it on the field. So they were stuck with this extra team in Division 2. So they went, oh, well, let's stick another three teams in. And then the Serie B teams all went, well, hang on a sec, that now means we've got four extra sides competing with us for promotion to Serie A. So they went, yeah, but if we put some extra teams in Serie A, how about that? So that's what they did, and we've been stuck with the same league format ever since. God bless. Right, OK, is that enough on Ireland? I mentioned the 2010 World Cup. We've, of course, got... by the way, FIFA are going to be deliberating on Ireland's application, an especially convened meeting on Wednesday, where they'll also be talking about the possibility of having the goal line referees. The draw, of course, is on Friday. And Sean, what's our plans for that?
Well, we'll have lots of things on the site. We'll have a live minute-by-minute coverage, and we'll have a Twitter feed with our fans network.
Do we have a fans network?
I think we do. It's currently... we have 67 people that said they'll tweet their reaction to the draw. And so there's that. We'll have interactive guides and everything else, but... the piece de la resistance, or you know, the best thing of all, the cherry on top of the big pie, is James Richardson, Barry Glendenning, Kevin McCarra, and The Guardian's very own David Pleat at the Emirates Stadium on Friday night, talking about the World Cup draw in front of a live studio audience, just like Cheers. So Barry will be like Norm, and you can be Cliff Claven.
No, that's the worst Cliff impression ever done. But anyway, yes.
Normie.
Yeah, that's the second one.
I'm slightly intimidated at the prospect of having to do this in front of a live studio audience, yes, and B, being in the presence of David Pleat, because he's actually a proper football person who knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And I'm slightly concerned that he's going to think we're idiots.
Yeah.
We could get Michael McIntyre in to do warm-up.
We certainly could. Now.
Have you ever noticed?
What else? I said that part three was busy, and somewhere, yes, here we go. The FA Cup draw. What does it all mean? I don't have it all written down in front of me, but I know that Leeds and Kettering had a 1-1 draw, and whoever goes through from that is going to face, is it Manchester United?
Manchester United at Old Trafford, yeah. Right. There's a few non-league teams, a couple of non-league teams, guaranteed to play Premier League side. York have got a trip to Stoke.
Wow.
And the winner of a replay between Oxford and Barrow travel to Sunderland in what could be an interesting tie.
That is interesting, isn't it?
They would be more interesting if, I just know I was watching it yesterday, all the big Premier League teams sort of came out first. If they were away from home, you'd sort of fancy, oh, that could be interesting. That might be an upset, but not
so
really.
The Leeds stroke Kettering game with Manchester United, is that at Old Trafford?
Yes.
Oh, right, okay. Still, rather there than Kettering, you were saying, Sean Ingle.
Well, I lived in Kettering for a few months, about 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago now.
Were you studying?
No, I wasn't. I worked for Motorcycle News.
So you weren't at Kettering College then?
No. No, I worked for a biking magazine, even though I had very little interest in biking.
Right.
And
Was that before you turned down My Trout magazine?
No, it was part of I worked for EMAP for the best part of 2 years, and then was made redundant / was offered a chance of working for a fishing magazine or a computer games magazine. Yeah, and ended up here.
All right then, never tire of hearing of that.
Have you ever actually even sat on a motorbike?
Yeah, I have actually. My very first week at Motorcycle News, the chief road tester had a Honda Super Blackbird souped up, which could go 156 miles an hour. And he said, oh no, I'll take you on the back of it. So we went at 156 miles around the A roads of Middle England. Apparently, I was gripping him so tight that I was giving him a Heimlich manoeuvre. And then he slowed down. I thought, phew, thank God for that. And he must have been going about 110 miles an hour. Then he started wheeling in between cars. And when I got back to the office, apparently I was as white as a sheet. But the very next week, this chief road tester, who's now the editor, I think, like on Mark Potter, was testing the new CBR 600, which was a souped-up, lovely bike, and he ended up crashing and smashing all his hips and pelvis. Yeah, he was sort of, you know, was in hospital for weeks. So, you know, almost everyone there, a nice bunch, but had serious bike accidents.
And, right. Let that be a warning to you, listeners, if you're on two wheels and thinking that the speed limits don't apply to you. They very much do. They're there for your own safety, in fact.
Okay. Are you angry for a government information service advert slot?
Why? Is there one going?
But you'd be good at voiceovers.
Thank you very much, Sean. Now, also in Cup news, there's the Carling Cup this week. How about that, eh? There's some very interesting draws there. Blackburn have got Chelsea. It's high on their list of priorities, is it? Or do you think Carlo's...
It is sort of. You speak to some of the Chelsea players and they say that their aim each season is always to win the Carling Cup because then they've got a trophy in the bag and then it takes the pressure off for the other... Well, obviously Arsene Wenger has a completely different approach. He just throws the kids in and they don't do as well.
Right, Arsenal... Sorry.
I was just going to say one of the... Carlo Ancelotti's other cup priorities is the FA Cup, obviously, where they've drawn Watford.
Ah.
And he was quoted over the weekend saying, the owner of Watford for many years ago was Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Elton John is my favourite singer. The match will be an opportunity to meet Elton John.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah. Which sounds a bit like Elton John talking in the third person to me, rather than...
Yeah.
Has anyone else's respect for Carlo Ancelotti just bottomed out at the revelation that his favourite singer is?
Elton John's a terrific singer. You don't know. I'm not always a fan of his songs, but his vocal performances therein, I have to say.
Bernie Taupin songs, strictly speaking.
Yeah, Bernie Taupin songs. They were co-written. Sorry.
Are you a 70s Elton John fan? Or do you
very much. Although I do enjoy his vocal stylings, as the convention demands I term them, on
I'm Still
That's
Standing.
What Friends Are For. Dion Ray. No, I didn't like I'm Still Standing.
That's why they call it the Blues.
Keep smiling and all that. No, and you
what about
can
his sort of
always count on me. Oh, for sure.
Pod gold.
Yeah.
What about Nikita? Can you do that?
Or Nikita? No, Nikita is the worst record of all time by anybody ever. No, we can't have all this. This is too self-indulgent.
Candle in the Wind, Diana.
No, 70s Elton John. You know. Ballad of Danny Bailey, if you're familiar with that. That's my. I think there's probably only one Elton John song I've got on, maybe two, three actually. But anyway, Ballad of Danny Bailey. Right, okay. But we were talking about Arsene Wenger and the kids, and they'll be playing Eastlands, Manchester City. That'll be an interesting game, won't it?
Well, will he pick the kids now again, or after yesterday's reverse, will he go, ooh, maybe we better send out the big guns?
And what will Mark Sparky Hughes be doing?
He will be picking his, I think, first team. He said he's gave a press conference to some of the media hacks, and he said that he'd have no hesitation in playing the big names and playing Adebayor, despite what happened last time they played. So you just expect him to name a strong side.
The point they were making, I think it was a match of the day too last night, was that the Carling Cup was basically could be Mark Hughes' salvation, and that although he's under pressure, that the fact that they're still in the Carling Cup, you know, would mean that he perhaps wouldn't get sacked. And I did think, has anybody ever been saved by the Carling Cup before? I couldn't think of anybody. So it just seemed like a strange thing to say. So yeah, but they'll certainly be sticking their full strength team out. Yeah.
Mm.
Will Carlos Tevez have recovered from his exertions at the O2 Arena though last week when he played tennis with his compatriot Del Potro?
Did he?
He did. Yeah.
Genuinely.
Yeah. After Del Potro finished beating Federer, while the ATP spent half an hour trying to figure out whether he was still in the tournament or not, he had a bash-up with Carlos Tevez, who was in the audience.
Oh, right, that's nice. Was he any good?
Tevez?
Yeah.
He was able to hit the ball, anyway.
Right. Was he able to find the net?
No.
All right. It's just as well in tennis, isn't it, if I'm right?
It's quite a good thing,
yeah, okay. Good. Manchester United are taking on Spurs, and Portsmouth are taking on Aston Villa, in a game that neither of them has much interest in, I'm guessing. Knowing O'Neill's aversion to
Once he gets to the quarterfinals, I think.
Okay.
You mentioned Man United. I think they will play their youth players,
right.
The same team, well, not the same team, but a similar team that lost to Besiktas last week. I think Fergie's quite angry about the flack he's got, and I think he might want to prove a few people wrong.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, there you go. That's the Carling Cup. I think that's about all the top level football drama from the wide world of the beautiful game that we've got time for this Monday anyway, but I imagine we'll have another spare 40 minutes or so to devote to it on Thursday. Perhaps you'd like to join us for that. In the meantime, we are Barry Glendinning.
Thank you.
John Ashdown. Cheers. Sean Ingle.
Thanks.
Me, AC Jimbo, and producer Ben. Many, many thanks. Hope to speak to you on Thursday. Bye for now.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.